Hi, welcome to Art as Legal Method. I am Marie Hadley. I am a sociolegal copyright researcher at the University of Newcastle in Australia. And today I am joined by concept artist Travis DeVries.
Hello, I'm Travis DeVries. I'm a Gamilaroi Darug concept artist. I guess to just quickly describe what that means is I work with a bunch of different mediums and across the different mediums. And I will kind of use whichever medium fits the concept that I need it to. So I'll draw on like collaboration or digital work or physical work or music or podcast or anything really to kind of fit the brief of what I'm making.
Today, Travis and I will be discussing the practitioner-based inquiry methodology that we used in our recent Art, Law and Justice project collaboration. And this particular methodology centres art making as well as critical reflection on the art making process. To give a little bit of background to how Travis and I came to work together in the first place, in 2021, I approached him with an art commission and I asked him to create an artwork that responded to and critically engaged with a piece of legal scholarship that I'd authored with Dr. Sarah Hook from the University of Western Sydney and PhD candidate Nicholas Orr from the University of Newcastle. And in this particular paper, we criticise law's regulation of the anti-racism graffiti of statues of historical figures that have been linked to colonialism and slavery. I asked Travis to create an artwork in response to this academic paper. And the reason why I did this was because I'd seen his work, Cook Falling, Tear It Down, which has strong anti-racism protest themes. In asking Travis to do this art commission, it was essentially kind of an experiment for me, where I was just super curious to see what would happen if I asked an artist to respond to legal scholarship in a creative way. So that's what the project was for me from the outset. But what about you, Travis? What did you think about being asked to do this type of commission?
I feel like with Tear It Down, particularly that work sort of deals with iconoclasm and anti-racism themes. And for me, like I'd been asked a few times to like recreate that work in different ways or with different statues and like focusing on the tearing down of statues, which is what the work depicts. And I had actually like turned down multiple commissions around that. And you had engaged in like my work online and had that conversation with me. And like you approached it from a person first conversation and not like outcome artwork commission. And you like talked me through the project and sort of what you thought and approaching it as an experiment for me like felt really interesting. And as a like, well, we, you know, ended up becoming co-researchers on the project. So for me, that potential outcome and that like perspective on things felt really interesting and like that there was a lot of opportunity for like co-design of how this would work. And like when I originally took on the commission, I was like, we don't even know. I hadn't even read the paper yet. So it was like, it was just a, like, okay, this is, we're approaching it from a conversational equal footing sort of aspect.
It's interesting that you mentioned that one of the things that you found interesting about the commission was the fact that I didn't actually ask you for a particular artwork, which it's so funny. If you go back to the original agreement that we entered into when we became co-researchers on the project, you'll notice that in the commission section, it's very vague what I've asked you to do. And it was literally, I asked you to respond or critically reflect upon this particular legal paper. That was the parameters. It was left open to you.
Yeah, and for me, that process and that like starting point really made things interesting, and the openness and broadness of it was what sort of drew me to being able to work on the project. Because like often with commissions, they're very pointed and focused and you have like a really rigid remit to meet. And this was like, it really could be anything, and it was open for exploration. I think the like timelines that we like looked at originally, I think I was like, oh yeah, we can get this done in 3 weeks or something, which was like for often with a commission, like you can, but because this was so open, there was room for experimentation. And so I think I did experiment and take that time.
Yeah, and it's so funny because 1 year down the track, we're still working together.
We're still milking this project.
We are, and it's since taken, you know, other directions. But just bringing it back for a moment to what you mentioned just before around conversation. So even from the get-go, we were having conversations about the particular themes in your earlier artwork. I was kind of filling you in on my motivations in that academic paper with Nick and Sarah. Conversations obviously became a really central part of our methodology, which is why we adopted the practitioner-based inquiry methodology. So I thought at this point, you know, it obviously makes sense to bring the methodology back into our chat now. Given the centrality of conversation to our initial, our initial chats and then everything that followed, we really needed a methodology which we were going to be able to have that exploration and experimentation with. And that's why we adopted practitioner-based inquiry, because yes, the creation of the artwork was important, but equally the dialogue that kind of went along with that art-making process was also important. So in terms of practitioner-based inquiry, it's a participation-based methodology that involves techniques of action and where practices are the source of data. So it focuses equally on the process of making an object and also the self-reflective examination of that process. So within that methodology, it essentially meant that you and I, Travis, we were researchers on the project, but we were also research participants. So we had that insider perspective on the creation of the work and that creative process that went into the creation of the work, which involved our conversations. In terms of data, and this actually took me a little while to get my head around, because being from law, not creative industries, this way of working is before, at least more than a year ago, was a little bit foreign to me. But in terms of the data itself, what that means was that the artwork that you created, Travis, Entropy Awakening, was part of the data. But so too was all of our documentation of that creative process that went into the creation of the artwork along the way. So in terms of your data, Travis, you know, things like sketches, the works in progress, in terms of any of the reflections you did along the way, and in terms of the data that I contributed as the non-creative collaborator, it was primarily in terms of my input into the conversations we had along the way, as well as after the process, I recorded some of my own kind of reflections and monologues around the research process.
Yeah, and I think we even captured a little bit of the agreement making process as well, and like reflected on that and why and how we made those decisions. So what did we do? We sought the process kind of started by seeking formal ethics approval for the research. Then over a period of about 4 months, not 3 weeks, Marie and I would meet on Zoom every couple of weeks and send the occasional email. I'd show Marie work in progress pictures and send her videos that I'd recorded of my creative process. When we'd meet up, we'd have conversations about the work in progress, including the compositional and the symbolism of the imagery. But we'd also talk about other things like activism, history, philosophy, books we were reading, personal values, and our jobs. This kind of became like a core part of the research process, because obviously the paper that you, Nick, and Sarah wrote was about sort of how the law kind of misses the mark in some way around the public interfacing with colonial statues and sort of public artworks in general. And I, as both an occasional street artist, concept artist, and I guess First Nations, I wouldn't identify as like a First Nations activist, but I like support activist movements in as many ways as I can. Like, I have obvious sort of thoughts and feelings and inclinations towards a way of working within that space, and the way the law sort of fails us as First Nations people. And so for me, like, whilst I was making the work, and the work was both a key data point but also a milestone outcome of the project, the analysis, self-analysis and co-analysis and reflection during that the PBE practice, that was also key in where the end result of the work ended up, and talking about those conceptual reasonings behind the work.
Did you find that that methodology, which really, I guess, at a micro level reinstated or resurrected some of that dialogue, which, you know, Nick and Sarah and I had argued is actually stifled by law, did you find that that dialogue and self-reflection made you slow down a little bit with your creative process in a way that you became a little bit more, like, did things become a little bit more deliberate, or it just gave you a slightly different way of working? Or
I think it gave me, like, both. Yes, things did become a lot more deliberate, and I gained a really different way of working. Particularly on a work of this style that is, like, technically a commission but is also a co-creation coming from this research practice. The ability to, you know, like, normally when I create, it is very sort of self-driven, and any sort of analysis and self-analysis and conceptual analysis that I'm doing by myself and not really – it's mid-process. And so the way we were working, we were taking time out from that creative process to really sit down and talk through, but also think through what the conceptual outcomes of the work might be. And for me, that gave me the space to have to justify what different symbolism within the work meant to you as a co-collaborator and a outside eye. So it was, we were talking through around what different things and objects in the work meant and what I wanted to achieve with that, or what I wanted it to mean, and kind of what a potential audience or what person one step removed from the creation of the artwork might feel that it means.
One question I've always wanted to ask you, and it came up in one of the self-reflection videos that I did after the artwork was completed, is whether you see the art as starting and finishing with the artwork, or as a, you know, as a concept artist, whether you see the art that was created in the project as something much broader.
Definitely much broader. Part of what I do across all of my body of work, unless I'm working at just creating something beautiful, or taking a photo of a sunset, as an example, where I'm not trying to have deeper symbolism or subtlety to the work, but so much of my work, and this work in particular, is the artwork in itself is one object, but how audiences interact with it and how I continue and to interact with it in collaboration with you, that to me is an extension of the artwork. And like, now we're working on a sort of an exhibition practice that sort of follows on from this process, that could sort of brings together the coalescence of the original artwork, Tear It Down, as well as like my inspiration and like working towards that, as well as a whole bunch of other things that from other points in my art practice that work towards Entropy Awakening and then beyond. So the work Entropy Awakening is like one fixed point in that conceptual journey that actually spans 5 or 6 years of my creative practice now, which for me as an artist feels really interesting. And like I hope for like research purposes and also audiences, like that is something that is interesting as well, like looking into how and why an artist creates a body of work that focuses around the one concept.
It's interesting because what you're describing, I guess, is this artwork as a stopping point or a stepping point or stepping stone, a moment within the research process, but then the research process, a moment within a broader trajectory. And it's almost like the closer you look, the more interrelated kind of everything is and the less boundaries there are around any of this. Is that kind of how?
Yeah, well, I definitely describe like both Tear It Down and Entropy Awakening as like two different fixed points on a timeline of, I guess, my exploration of this concept. And like I think in a lot of our methodology chats and research chats, a lot of what we were looking at is like my influences from Tear It Down and like the reasoning behind that work at that time versus my, I guess, takes from the paper that you, Nick, and Sarah wrote, and then like bringing those reflections to that next stage, which then kind of became Entropy Awakening. And so like I'm already creating artwork that follows on from that as well.
So things just keep getting folded in almost.
Yeah, yeah.
If
someone doesn't like this sort of work, it's going to be incredibly boring. But for those people who are like...
Well, the more they look, the more they're just going to see more of it.
Yeah.
Just different versions, you know. I found this to be a really thought-provoking experience, like not just from a research point of view, but working with someone whose style of thinking and way of approaching work is just so foreign to me as a legal academic. And I would have said that I have a relatively flexible way of thinking about law because of my social sciences background, but this style of thinking, which doesn't, it just, I don't know, it's not that it lacks constraints, but it seems freer or more intuitive.
Which is interesting because, like, for me, like, what we were talking about originally was about responding to the legal paper you wrote around how the law sort of fails artists and communities around interacting with public artwork, particularly colonial statues. Within my body of work around this, I've never actually physically interacted with a colonial statue. I'm making commentary about them, but not actually doing any physical intervention. I'm also another step removed from almost the risk.
And that feeling is exactly how I guess I felt about this entire research process, because I can criticize something, I can put words on a page, I can, you know, intellectually apply these critical race theories and then analyze the law in a way that, you know, can persuasively put forward an argument around law stifling freedom of expression in this particular way. I can do that, but it's an intellectual exercise and it is removed. It does have that separation about it. And working with you made me, I guess, think in a way which was, or experience law in a way which was freer. But it's interesting that on your end, there's still some of those constraints, or there's still that, well, there's more structure there than what I see or what I experienced.
Yeah, but I guess the concern, I think we talked about this quite a bit as well, is like around my intention with these works, is that they aren't just five steps away critical analysis or my thoughts. They are, I guess, like almost living, breathing documents that looks at speculative, they're speculative fiction, and they are about kind of imagining a world where these statues are torn down, or they do kind of fade into nothingness because we as a society don't give them the meaning that they are currently kind of thinking that some part of society is thinking they deserve. And so my commentary on them is meant to be a living, breathing, artistic document that is inspire is the wrong word, but like that's the sort of closest word that I can think to from a concept. The like Tear It Down is supposed to be something that we aspire to as a society. For me as an artist, that's my hope with the works.
With that being your hope for the works, I think I can safely say, Travis, that I experience them in that way, in the sense that you mentioned that you're presenting, I guess, different possibilities or different aspirational futures. And during the period of working with you and throughout our conversations, I felt like I was being drawn into this world, which was, you know, foreign, and in the sense that it forced me to think in a slightly different way, but it was, you know, at the same time a little bit confusing, a little bit confronting. Like we'd finish our conversations and then I would just sit there and I'd be like, wow, that was impactful. And then, but thinking through why, it took me time. Like I felt drawn into the worlds you were creating, and even though I feel like our values and our perspectives around a lot of these issues are very similar, like I still felt that power. That make sense?
Well, I would say the same from a like reading the papers and your works point of view, and also the conversations, because I guess I'm coming at it from a very different background to you, and my obviously like my way of working is I'm not a academic or a lawyer, and so I don't have that sort of background of that, and so like for me the law only serves if it is movable and changeable, and so like we have to make critique on it for it to continue to be updated and reflect the society that we want. And so like my work as an artist that is speculative fiction and, you know, is really sort of has violent tendencies towards these colonial objects that, you know, like no longer serve the community or people as far as I see it. And so like the artwork that I'm creating, whilst it's aspirational, like the hope is that laws will be updated to actually reflect community sentiment around these things.
Drawing this all together now, in one sentence, how did you find this methodology? Was it productive? Did we achieve what we set out to do?
Yeah, I think with working with this methodology, I think it really is about like giving time for reflection, and it was incredibly helpful from an artistic point of view, and from a personal ideological point of view around what is behind the artwork. It's a real privilege to be able to work in this way. And I think the work, Entropy Awakening, really kind of reflects that deeper engagement.
One final question for you, Travis.
Yes.
If other research teams were to adopt this methodology, were to adopt practitioner-based inquiry, what do you think could be done better from what we did? What advice would you give those researchers, those interdisciplinary teams?
I think it's such a a hard question to ask because it or answer because it's like speculating on like how would that change the outcome of this project as well, and what would become different because of that. But I think like having the artists and or interdisciplinary team like working together earlier on like a co-design of the entire methodology around it would like could only be more beneficial. And that I guess that comes down to like resourcing as well, and that, you know, would potentially change the like the outcome of this project as a whole. But I think it would be like a very interesting experiment to have.
I would love to repeat the experiment with that type of idea and having the team that what we've got now together right from the beginning. But I wonder as well whether having things develop in the organic way they did in our project was part of the reason why it worked out so well, because I would never have been able to prejudge any of this.
Well, yeah, and I think like that's comes down to like scientific method of being of having to be able to like replicate your outcomes or replicate your research, because you know you would with the I guess variables in creative practice and also like I guess the variables around kind of the human element of the team that gets put together around this stuff, like you would end up with a different outcome potentially each time. And I think like I guess what I would describe as a success for this project is I guess the way that we have continued to collaborate on the we've continued this project on.
Thank you so much for joining me today on our Art as Legal Method blog piece.
Thank you as well. Art as Legal Method was produced by Travis DeVries from Awesome Black Media, written by Marie Hadley and Travis DeVries. For further information about the broader research project that this collaboration is a part of, see mariehadley.com/project_ALJ. For further reading on the practitioner-based inquiry method, see Philip McIntyre, Creative Practices Research, Testing Out, The Systems Model of Creativity Through Practitioner-Based Inquiry. This project was supported by University of Newcastle Law School.